Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, you remember Bernie Sanders. He doesn't think Christians are fit for public office. That's a write-up from The Federalist that Grant will take a look at. Also, for those that are interested in video games or just the way that movement is going, there's an update about their conference and some of the new games coming out. We'll have a look at that. And Trump, Trudeau, and the worrying rise of the celebrity politician. An interesting look at that. And more Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Online, kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to, kpcgfm, and also email us, comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau here today. Abraham, or Grant, rather, your black coat today, black shirt, because the Warriors won, I assume he was...
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that. My wife picked out my outfit.
Okay. Well, she was upset about it.
Probably was.
Golden State Warriors, and they won the NBA championship last night, and 4-1. And it was a good game. It was a competitive game right up until the end. The Golden State pulled away there a little bit. Here in Oklahoma City, we probably have somewhat conflicting feelings about it because of Kevin Durant, what would be the word, betraying Oklahoma City. So he won, you know, and you're always happy when you win, but a lot of people aren't happy with the way he did it by going to Golden State. But this is what he said last night. He said after they won, he said, "It feels so great because, like I said, it's a team sport. Man, you got to want to sacrifice. You got to want to put your teammates in front of yourself sometimes." I think that would be a screen role, actually. he said, "And I just tried to do that, but also be aggressive. Andre Iguodala told me all the time, it's your time. Go take it. It's about you. But I'm like, no, it's about us. It's about us. But I'm still going to be me." That will live on in the annals of history, that quote.
That left me confused and conflicted there. Obviously, he does want to be the star, but he doesn't want to say it, and he doesn't always want the full pressure of it. Pretty interesting. I was looking on Twitter last night just to see how people responded to Durant winning the championship, and it was actually still about at least 60% negative responses that I saw. A lot of people writing things about snakes or saying, like, here's a live looking at the press conference and it had a snake in front of a microphone and stuff like that.
Well, the reports are that after the Game 7 loss last year in the finals, Green, he called Durant from either the parking lot or the drive home saying, you know, we need you. And I think in fairness to just the way it all played out, Golden State doesn't win the series without Durant. They needed him. Mm-hmm. And because they don't have a guy that really creates his own when they need it. And he did. He stepped up. And I think if they didn't have him, I think they would have lost definitely in the finals, maybe not even gotten there. They're a great team, but they needed that. They did need that guy to create his own shot, and they got it. LeBron James played fantastic. Mm-hmm. First guy to average a triple-double in the finals. Could only do so much, I guess. And so now the question moving forward is, what does he do? Does he get a bunch more pieces and make a super super Cavaliers team? Does he go somewhere else? Because everybody's eyeing Golden State saying, okay, well, they've got all these superstars in their 20s. What are we going to do? And if the Warriors don't break up, somebody's going to have to come in there and also get a team that can compete against them.
It feels like there's almost a sense of hopelessness around the whole league because they know that all the Warriors' best players are still in their 20s. They probably have another 7 or 8 or 9 years together if they all stay there, if they can all be paid for somehow. But that just really is an imposing, intimidating obstacle for any other team. And who knows, maybe LeBron James will go somewhere else again like he did before.
Yeah, there's some rumors that he might do that. Maybe come to the Thunder, play for us.
Wow.
That'd be great.
I don't think he likes. Well, I mean, he likes Cleveland. It's kind of scorned as a city. Oklahoma City is as well. I don't know if that would make any difference to him.
Yeah, who knows what'll happen there? But that'll be somewhat interesting to see how it all develops. And a lot of times, when a team wins a championship, even if you're not a fan, you get excited, especially if it's their first one. Dallas Mavericks. I've never been a Mavericks fan, but when they won and Dirk Nowitzki got a championship and he fought through all those years, you know, you do feel like, hey, good for him. You know, he got it, or some of these other guys. I think that's the thing with Durant winning with Golden State. He took the easy road, and that's why it's hard to be as happy for him as if he had stayed. You know, if he had stayed with Oklahoma City, we probably would have won the championship.
Right.
Because Golden State, as good as they are, we were real close and probably could knock them off. See, and that's what people usually expect. Okay, you almost got them last year. Come back and get them this year and be the champion. And then the celebration can begin. That's why I think people don't, all of them don't love the way Durant did it.
Yeah, and it was strange to watch because obviously he was extremely valuable. As you said, he was the finals most valuable player. I awarded that last night, and he was just incredible, unstoppable in the whole series. But where was that when the team needed it last year? And why was he so friendly with that team before he had even finished the season with the Thunder? I mean, that was really, that's something you could call fake news, because that story you were talking about with Draymond Green calling Durant after the finals, it was pretty much saying that they didn't even start talking to each other until after the finals, even though they were talking to each other while they were playing each other in the playoffs, and Durant and Green were actually hanging out after the games, making the entire Thunder team mad.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now they go into the off season and they'll talk about the draft and other things. We're almost getting into that lull in the sports year where baseball's going on, but nothing's really happening with some of the other sports. NFL hasn't started yet, so I think that's where it's harder for sports talk shows, because what are you going to talk about? They got to dig up something. So anyway, that's kind of interesting history. Good for Steve Kerr. He won another one as a coach. And today, historically, back in 97, he hit the game winner for the Bulls to win the championship. So he's had some good Junes in his lifetime. Abraham, you have a Twitter poll that you just put out there. It's got a little response. Go ahead and tell us about that.
Sure. So at least in the U.S., all the news is still revolving around the Trump-Russia investigation. Some people might think that Trump will fire Mueller, who is their special counsel investigating the ties. So the Twitter poll this week is, what do you think the Trump-Russia investigation will reveal? What will they find out about it? And I have four options. First one is that Trump is the lapdog of Vladimir Putin. The second is that Trump is guilty of obstruction of justice by firing Comey. Third is that there are some indirect ties to Trump and Russia, that Russia may have interfered, but there's nothing directly linked to the president himself. And the last one is that there are no ties between Trump and Russia. There are no ties at all. So far it's been interesting. There's only been two categories. Almost 90% of people think that they'll find nothing tying Trump to Russia. And the other 10% think that Trump will be guilty of obstruction of justice.
Interesting.
So those are the two so far, and we'll see tomorrow how it finally pans out. But it seems like people, or at least the narrative is changing now to where they're trying to nail Trump for obstruction of justice rather than tying him directly to some kind of Russian collusion.
Yeah.
Why did this panic about Russia just now start? Does anyone remember the 2012 presidential debates when Mitt Romney was asked the greatest threat to the U.S.? He actually said Russia, and Barack Obama laughed at him.
Right.
So apparently Republicans have been concerned about Russia for a long time, but now out of nowhere the Democrats are as well.
Yeah, I think and you can weigh in at Abraham Blondo on Twitter. Look at that poll and weigh in, give your thoughts on it too, and we'll take a look at it tomorrow, see what people think. But I think both sides, conservative or liberal, I think everybody kind of knows that, okay, they're just trying to find anything on the current president. Like, they don't care what it is. They're just going to dig around and whatever sticks, throw it against the wall, whatever sticks, will go with that. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody knows. I don't think that's a big mystery to anybody. You know, it's a big deal because they want it to be a big deal. Whereas they didn't want it to be a big deal before. I think even in talking about Russia in the past, wasn't it John Kerry, a Secretary of State, that said, like, well, that's so last century or something
right.
You know, so back then, oh, that's a joke. We don't care about any of that. And actually in that, I remember in those some of those debates, anytime something was brought up that actually was worth talking about, whether it was President Obama or whether it was especially Vice President Biden, their response was to laugh. Right. And somehow that qualified as a rebuttal.
Exactly.
And I remember watching the one with Joe Biden, and I couldn't believe it. He just laughed. He just shake his head and just laugh. I thought, well, if that's all it takes to debate, I think any of us could run for office, couldn't we? You don't need to know anything. You just laugh and shake your head.
Yeah, it's amazing that, I think everyone knows Russia is a threat. They're a very serious threat to the world's stability. That's been no secret for 100 years, ever since the Russian Revolution. But what's interesting is that Vladimir Putin hasn't done much since President Trump has been elected. Under President Obama, he invaded Crimea and eastern Ukraine. He went into Syria, and he did a bunch of other things that are clear violations of international law. And, I mean, he invaded territory and took it over, and he's aiding America's enemies in the Middle East. That's something to attack Russia about. They're trying to... Well, in fact, John Kerry's the one who said we need to work with Russia to create a new kind of stability in the Middle East. So that's collusion.
Sure.
There's any. He publicly said they're going to work with Russia when it's very clear Russia is actively working against the United States, and especially in that region. So it's just a flip-flop on issues to make the president look bad when there are very real issues in the Ukraine and Middle East that need to be resolved about what Russia is doing there, but the media doesn't spend any time on them.
Yeah, if you look at what appears to be Putin's strategy, just from a long view, when President Obama was in office, he flexed his muscles and did what he wanted. And now with President Trump in office, he's just sitting back and letting the U.S. media attack him and just biding his time, it appears. And maybe gearing up for his next move. But like you said, he's not moving militarily, at least that I'm aware of. But he doesn't need to do anything. The president's biggest enemies are here in the country. It's the media, so he can just sit back and laugh.
Yeah, exactly. It's Russia is interfering in American politics because the media is allowing it. I mean, they're basically grinding politics to a standstill by propagating this myth, I think, that they'll find out soon enough. But I think what's interesting, Oliver Stone, the filmmaker, he interviewed Putin and made this 4-hour documentary about him. And he watched like a Cold War movie with him in a conference room, and trying to make jokes with him and just showing the American public who Putin is. And it's just I watched a little bit of it. I want to watch the whole thing. I think it's airing tonight on CBS or some, one of the main stations.
Huh.
People can watch it there, but. It was just an odd, surreal experience because obviously Putin, I mean, Oliver Stone doesn't mean anything to him, but they just analyze his what he's like, and they say he acts like a cool bureaucrat that can loose the dogs whenever he wants. Like, he's not afraid of what anyone thinks about him or anything, because it doesn't matter what he says or what he does with Oliver Stone. He's still going to be the top dog in Russia, no matter what. So, and Oliver Stone kind of has a sympathetic view towards him. So it's kind of a weird documentary. And Oliver Stone is the one who criticized Megyn Kelly for her interview with Putin. So it's kind of just it's weird how much attention he's getting right now. And they're not really, they're kind of useless interviews. They're not getting down to issues or trying to pin him on anything. They're just allowing him to talk and make jokes, basically.
The time frame is really important here, because I believe out of those 4 hours of footage, the first 2 hours at least were filmed before the election played out. And so those are the two parts that I think have been released to the public already. And in those two parts, Oliver Stone is very friendly toward Vladimir Putin. Oliver Stone is from the American left. He's friendly toward Vladimir Putin. But what about the last two parts after the election? It might be interesting to see how Oliver Stone treats Vladimir Putin then, if there's some sort of a drastic change in the way he treats him, because apparently he's going to also believe that Vladimir Putin interfered in the election and caused Hillary Clinton to lose.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin's a slippery character. people that can't really pin him down, there's a lot about him on thetrumpet.com that check out. Some really good information about him and some good insight. He Vladimir Putin is, they kind of have a crush on him. Doesn't the media kind of have a crush on him? He's kind of like this, I don't know, they're fascinated by him. They as much as they're talking about collusion and all this, it seems like they really like the guy, mm-hmm. sort of. And I don't know exactly what the fascination is, but it doesn't seem to me like it's a good idea to let somebody that's clearly an enemy of the United States have a megaphone through the U.S. media to just say what he wants. I think that's dangerous because he's I don't know if he's good at propaganda or not, but he why would you let a guy like that just talk? And on one hand say, oh, collusion and we don't want anything to do with them, but then open up all these interviews to this guy. What are they hoping? Like he's gonna spill the beans accidentally? Like, oh yeah, you know. like you said, Abraham, he doesn't care. He doesn't care what Megyn Kelly thinks or Oliver Stone. He's a dictator of one of the largest and most powerful nations on this earth. He disposes of people.
Mm-hmm.
It means nothing to him. And yet they're just fascinated by this guy. It'd be like interviewing Hitler, in a way. and that might be a bit of a strong connection or, you know, a little bit of a strong analogy there between those two or comparison. But he is a dictator, and he wants to rule the world. And here the media is giving him a megaphone to talk. I don't understand why.
Consider the hypocrisy here. We talked recently about how Jimmy Fallon was blasted for apparently humanizing the American president, Mr. Trump, just by having him on his late night show for a non-political interview. And then, you know, these other people, Oliver Stone was obsequious. He was described in these interviews with Vladimir Putin. And apparently that's totally fine. You can humanize a monster like him, but don't you dare humanize the American president.
Yeah, it's different takes on those things. you guys like French fries?
Oh, yeah.
No, bad news for you. It's going to kill you. French fries are related to early death. It's not the fries. It's the oil, obviously. 8-year study that just came out, which was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It's just funny, clinical nutrition. analyzed the dietary habits of 4,400 people, including how often they ate fried and unfried potatoes. It's an odd thing to look at. Who were between the ages of 45 and 79. By the end of the study, 236 people had died. But in that age range, that's not probably that unusual. Researchers found that people who had fried potatoes, such as French fries, tater tots, or hash browns, more than twice a week, more than doubled their risk of death. But they didn't find a link between people who ate unfried potatoes and death. Do you think it's the oil they're frying it in? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that it's the oil. The oil is the issue.
Yeah, that's... well, I think that's just common sense scientifically explained because, what we cook our food in has a lot to do with its value, whether it's butter, margarine, and the kind of oil you use, not even when you're deep frying. But, I mean, it's obvious that deep frying isn't the healthiest thing for you. French fries here and there aren't bad for you. I mean, they do taste good, but you can't have them all the time because you can't get away with it because all that oil and that fat, it's not good fat. It's especially with the oil they usually use for deep frying and fast food, it just clings to your insides and slows down your arteries and everything.
Yep. So they're delicious, but they do not biodegrade, as we've all seen in that documentary Super Size Me. The French fries don't change. You just leave them there. You know, it's not that uncommon in a parking lot to see somebody drop their French fries. They're just sitting there. There's nothing. Nothing's happening to them because they're not a natural food that's breaking down because of what's been done to them.
I'm sure that's one of the things archaeologists will find in 100 years of American society. Like, wow, we can still eat these things.
Yeah, they're still good. Good. Still taste the same.
Have you guys ever had poutine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Up in Canada.
Yeah, it's the best poutine I've ever had was...
Vladimir Poutine?
I wish, but it was at a little... it's called Cypress Hills Park in South Saskatchewan, and it had a poutine shack. You just go there just for poutine.
Huh.
And it was big French fries, lots of gravy, lots of mozzarella cheese, and it looked amazing.
Yeah.
But I just looked at it, I'm like, wow, it's cardiac arrest in a little paper box. Because,
sure.
I mean, it tastes really good, and we only had it once in a while, but it's, you just can't. I can't imagine eating that every day or something like that.
It's like a lot. Well, up in Wisconsin, I don't know if they do it here, but at the county fairs, there's fried cheese curds.
Oh yeah,
that's a big thing, and it's kind of a once a year deal. And we would get some. It was a highlight. Oh, the fried cheese curds. And I always thought the container wasn't big enough. I'm like, I want more though. But then you eat three or four of them and couldn't do any more. Like, just too much. Too much, but same sort of thing. If you ate that too often, you'd be fried inside. So that it's not great for you. But anyway, that's a study out there about the French fries. You can still have them, just if you make them at home and cook them in better oils and things, it'd probably be better for you. Grant, I just looked over at you and I remember that you had your wife had her baby shower last night.
Yeah, surprise.
And my wife went and brought home a little lit. There's like game. They play games at baby showers. As a guy, I never go. So I obviously, so I don't know. But there's games. Mm-hmm. My wife tells me about them. And so one of the games was like, how well do you know Grant? And so my wife had a list and she was just asking me if I knew the answers. And I don't know. Like, I didn't know if I did or not. But what's your favorite? What was the question? What was your favorite outdoor activity?
Camping.
Camping. I said walking. I'm like, I don't know, walking around?
It's pretty close. Yeah. That's a really good guess.
Yeah. What was another one? Favorite food? Was that one of them? Something like that?
Favorite fast food, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Got kind of specific.
Favorite fast food. Yeah, what was that?
I just threw Whataburger on there. I don't really know.
Okay, see,
I was going to guess that, actually.
I guess Burger King. I don't know. I just threw it out there.
Oh, yeah, that's high up there, too.
So, yeah.
They're all good.
Yeah.
It's hard to differentiate after a while.
So, sorry, I didn't know you as well as I thought I did.
Did you know my favorite TV show? Your wife was the only one who guessed the correct channel, which was pretty close. She guessed Fox News Channel.
Okay.
And I like Tucker Carlson Tonight.
Okay.
At least right now, you know, it changes a lot.
Sure.
My favorite shows, but that's right now.
You don't like Rachel Maddow's show?
No. I like Jesse Waters' too. He has
Waters
his new,
World, yeah.
He has his new show now, too.
Yeah, I caught some of it, actually, Saturday night. And he was talking to this guy about this documentary they were doing about, I think, what was it about?
Oh, yeah. No Safe Spaces.
Yeah.
Dennis Prager.
Yeah, it looks really interesting. So, yeah. I always liked the Waters World segment. It was kind of funny, and now he's got his own show. Mm-hmm. So, well, there you go. So, anyway, we should post some of those questions on Twitter and see how well people know Grant. Make it a little more of a global reach. You guys might remember a while ago, Rolling Stone published that article about the University of Virginia fraternity and accused them of rape, and then it turned out they didn't do it. Rolling Stone settles with them, with the fraternity. They had to pay them $1.65 million.
What do you think they're going to do with that money? That's interesting.
I don't know. Who does it go to? Yeah.
That's some great parties.
Yeah, they did sue. They had been sued for $25 million, so they didn't get the $25, but they got $1.65. Maybe you got to shoot the moon, and then it comes back to, you know, if you sued for $1 million, would you gotten $1,000?
Probably.
Maybe you got the magazine agreed to pay the settlement. So, okay, they settled to Phi Kappa Psi by August 31st, and unmarked bills. Leave it outside the dorm. put it in a big suitcase. So anyway, you got to be careful when you write things that it is accurate, especially when you're accusing somebody of something that severe. They got caught lying and they paid $1.25 million.
You would think Mr. Trump could have a pretty easy time suing. He threatens it a lot with a lot of different media outlets, but he never actually follows through, at least not yet. He could easily win some of those, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is interesting. It does show that at least at this point in time, there is still some responsibility on some things. But like you said, Grant, a lot is said that it just kind of goes by the wayside and nobody ever maybe is held as accountable as it could be. Because, you know, I don't know, maybe they'd say, well, it was a mistake or whatever. But I don't know what happened to the writer of this particular piece. I think they sort of stood by him for a while, but I'm sure I would assume they got fired, I would hope, after losing that much money for your company.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised it's not a lot more because, I mean, that's a serious charge. And there was a lot of, I think some people were getting threatened to be fired, like from the university. And
right.
I don't exactly remember what happened now, but I mean, because like that person got burned by coffee, got like, what was it, $20 million or something? I forgot how much it was, but something ridiculous. And then, to me, this is worth a lot more than that, maybe,
sure.
Especially not only to the fraternity, but maybe to the university or something like that, because you just kind of go around accusing people of a crime where they can be in jail time, pretty serious jail time, and then just walk away and have the company pay for you. That's just something that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad they had to pay because it should make them more responsible.
Wasn't that the case where the girl was walking around campus holding a mattress and as kind of like a protest for her supposedly being raped? Was that the one?
I'm not sure. There's been a few that have come out. I just remember this one being a big, big cover story, getting a lot of attention, trying to expose like things on the U.S. campuses, and it turns out it was fictitious.
Yeah. That's a tough situation as a writer, because obviously you can't always prove the person right or wrong, but if you do have some sort of an ideology to advance the supposed rape culture that's taking root in America, you'd have an easy time writing that without necessarily checking it as closely as you should. It's fine to write about the fact that maybe a girl's protesting on campus, but you can't say that it's true or even really indicate that it's true if you don't know 100% for sure, because that just kills reputations.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if they wanted to cover, they wanted to write a piece about the problems on U.S. campuses, I don't think you'd have to dig too deep.
No, not at all.
But it wouldn't fit this narrative probably as much as they'd like to put it out there. Today is the 13th of June, and here's a couple of interesting historical notes. 1547, on this day, King Ferdinand of Austria subjects himself to Ottoman Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent. The reason I find that interesting is just because the guy's name was Suleiman the Magnificent. That's a pretty epic name. Like, you have to be pretty good at things. It's not as effective to be called, like, Suleiman the Pretty Good Guy. Like, he's magnificent.
Yeah.
We should start naming our politicians that today.
That, well, I'm sure we get a lot of names that can't be repeated there. But, yeah, it's interesting looking in history, all the different, because there's Edward the Confessor, Ivan the Terrible. What was it? There's some that are just ridiculous, like someone the sad or someone the softer, like just all these different words they associate with people. Just because in hindsight, they're like, yeah, that what word really pins him down? It's that one. It's the confessor.
And how does it catch on? Like, you know, who decides that that's the name?
I think it's back then. Today we have like a million historians, but back then very few people could read and write.
Right.
So the historian, usually someone in the church, would write the history of the king, and they would confer a title on them. Or like Richard the Lionheart, he was actually called Coeur de Lion in French, and that just came about from people singing songs about him and praises because he was lion-hearted in battle. So there's that kind of thing too, where he does something amazing and they write a song about him and a phrase stays with someone.
Yeah, it's the same today. If somebody gives you a nickname, it usually will stick. Hopefully it's a good one. but if you try to give yourself a nickname, it never works. You can't nickname yourself. Like, I'm, you know, start calling me such and such.
T-Bone.
Yeah, Seinfeld reference. Yeah.
I was nicknamed Fruitcake on the bus. Did I tell you about that?
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. I didn't even know it was bad. I was so young, I didn't know it was a bad thing.
Right.
Fruitcake sounded nice, but apparently it's not the nicest reference.
You guys don't like fruitcake? What's wrong with that? It's delicious. Actually, people, no, it's not delicious. another thing that happened on this day in history, 1865, President Andrew Johnson proclaims a reconstruction of Confederate states after the Civil War. In 1937, baseball note, Joe DiMaggio hits three consecutive home runs against the St. Louis Browns, which, of course, they've changed their name several times. But
did he move to Cleveland, become a football team?
Yeah. Speaking of the Cleveland Browns, they've been bad for quite some time. And one of the Pittsburgh Steeler receivers, who's quite good, Antonio Brown, he was up for, I think he's coming up for a contract, or he did come up for a contract recently, and he made the mistake of getting involved with one of these Instagram models, and he had some of her possessions, and she wanted them back, so she tweeted his phone number to everyone that follows her, his actual phone number. And so Cleveland Brown fans began to text him. And they had some of the text up, and they said, they were like, come to Cleveland. We'll be Super Bowl champions. We're going to bring Johnny Manziel back. And so, you know, that's a problem if you're a famous sports personality or something else and your phone number gets out there. You know, people want to contact you to talk sports. And so Cleveland Browns fans were begging him to come to Cleveland. So lesson learned, I hope, for Mr. Brown.
Those are some great fans, although they seem to have forgotten his jump kick to the face of their own punter a couple of years ago. they should probably be a little bit more angry at him still.
I remember that play. Did he get a penalty for that?
He did.
Yeah, because yes. It's kind of it's like you have to stop and think about it for a minute. Like, is that illegal? To jump kick a guy in the fans football, I mean.
Like straight out of a video game. He just cleated right through his face mask pretty much and then just knocked him flat on the ground.
Be glad you're not wearing one of those old-timey one single bar helmets.
Yeah, that would have done
real damage.
I just remember this. The funniest Cleveland Browns joke I ever heard was on Whose Lines Anyway? And they were doing a fake newscast. And for the sports news, they said, Beverly Hills 90210, Cleveland Browns 3.
I got one almost as good. Somebody actually went into, MapQuest or Google or something. I can't remember. And they actually programmed it so when people looked up, like they tried to, if they put sadness into like the MapQuest in Cleveland, it took them to the Browns Stadium. It's a joke, but it actually worked. Somebody tried it. Like they inadvertently typed the wrong thing and it took them to, I forget if it was sadness or futility, some rant bad word like that, or negative losing word. It took them down to the Browns Stadium. Sorry, Cleveland. We have some listeners online.
At least they have the Cavs.
Yeah, they have the Cavs. But you lost last night.
And the Indians. Right. They blew a 3-run lead
That's
last year.
True. But never mind any of that. This is Trumpet Radio Live 101.3 KPCG. Make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up with your host, Stephen Fleury. Also, check out thetrumpet.com. Headline today, Latin America hopes on Germany. German Chancellor Merkel's visit to Latin America has the world's attention. Is she forging an alliance against President Trump? That's a top story today at thetrumpet.com. Grant, you've got a write-up from The Federalist. Bernie Sanders, we'll remember him, of course, as the, he could have almost been the candidate for the Democrats. He was close. Bernie Sanders doesn't think Christians are fit for public office. What has he said?
Well, he brought this out. He exposed this point of view that he has in Senate confirmation hearing last week. It was actually the same day as James Comey's testimony, and it was a hearing for Russell Vogt, Mr. Trump's nomination for the Office of Management and Budget. And apparently Mr. Vogt is a Christian, and he had written several years ago in defense of his college where he was a professor because someone at the college had said she was going to wear a hijab in solidarity with the Muslims. So what this guy wrote in the article was that Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned. That's what Mr. Vogt wrote in that article a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And so what Bernie Sanders did was he called that Islamophobic and hateful. And obviously it is strong language, but if you step back and you think of it, what he is claiming is that Christians have the soul right of the afterlife and they are the sole possessors of the truth when it comes to religion. Is that not what every Muslim, every Hindu, every Taoist, every Buddhist thinks as well? It's already strange enough that Christians can have 20,000 different denominations and all really believe that every single one of those is okay, but they just don't branch beyond that basically.
Yeah, that's true. People that would consider themselves to be Christian do face this questioning, especially if you're going into public office. Well, what do you think about these other religions? And inevitably, if they're honest, they think, well, they're not right because I think I'm right. Mm-hmm. But they don't usually ask that of somebody running that, say, would have a different religion. You don't see too many people saying, so you want to be in the, you know, Senate or whatever. What do you think about Christians? You know, that even asking that question would be very much frowned upon, I think. But it does show the double standard.
Yes, it should be frowned upon. Here's exactly what Mr. Sanders said. He called Mr. Vogt's view indefensible, it is hateful, it is Islamophobic, and it is an insult to over a billion Muslims throughout the world. You know, that's what he believes, and that's clearly he is responding to some strong language from Mr. Vogt, that appointee as well. But the thing is, could you imagine him questioning a Muslim appointee for office in the same exact way? What do you think of Christians, like you mentioned?
Yeah.
Do you think that Christians are condemned if they do not convert to Islam before death? And obviously the answer would be yes, for anyone who is a Muslim or any other religion as well. It's pretty hypocritical here, and it's also in violation of Article 6 of the Constitution, imposing a religious test on someone who is in line for a political office in the country. But the thing is, a lot of people on the left especially don't really think too highly of any religion except for the ones that they think are politically convenient to them. So right now they're catering to Islam a lot, obviously, and they will not really criticize Islam in the same way that they criticize Christians, who, if you've noticed, vastly or more they're vastly more conservative.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is obviously a political sort of game, but the thing that's difficult for any politician, but especially probably the ones on the left, is in trying to cater to all these different groups, those groups don't agree with them with each other. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're trying to cater to, say, illegal immigrants, which they've done, most of those, if they're coming up from Latin America, would be Christian for the most part. And okay, so maybe they agree that they can both kind of be lumped in under this umbrella of being persecuted, as they would view it. But when you get down to those two different groups, they're going to have very strong disagreements about the same exact topic, religion. So, you know, I understand politically why they would go after this, because it's kind of the expedient thing for them to do. But at some point, these groups are trying to all get in one basket that they would have very strong disagreements there, too. So you have the threat of isolating one of those. So it's hard to keep them all together unless you just, I guess, say, hey, you're all being persecuted by big, bad America. maybe that's the argument, but these groups that are more of the special interest types, they don't agree with each other either.
As trumpet writer Andrew Miller recently put it, it is a matter of priorities, because obviously Muslims and Christians do not have much in common, but right now their common enemy, at least if you're talking about illegal immigrant Christians and Muslims, their common enemy is basically conservatives in America who are trying to uphold some sort of a law on the southern border, some sort of a vetting system for people who come to the country. Obviously, both groups, illegal immigrants and Muslim refugees, are going to be strongly against such a measure. And so right now, of course, they're going to be attacking the conservatives first. What happens, though, if they achieve their goal of destroying the conservatives? They're going to have to turn on each other, just like homosexuals and transgender people are under that same umbrella. Muslims do not hold a fond view of those types of people either. And so even though they're on the same side right now, that's not necessarily how it's always going to be. The thing is here is the left is totally fine with violating the Constitution by imposing a religious test. This is what they were supposedly outraged by with Mr. Trump's recent, what he calls a travel ban, because they're saying it's discriminating against all Muslims. For one, that's not true. But for another thing, they're quick to come to the defense of a different religion, but not Christianity, because it is a threat to their dominance of the country.
Yeah, it's a very the arguments change. We've seen the same thing in the Russia situation. You know, is it a big deal to talk to Russia? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Well, it depends on if we've won or if we've lost. So we're seeing that happen in a lot of different areas, including something like this. It would be very difficult to run for office. I don't know what motivates people to do it, especially if you're more of a conservative. I mean, you're going to have to withstand the floodgates being opened and the accusations coming, and you know everything you think is going to be held up to the light, and they're going to try to attack it.
Look at the recent appointment of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. He has been basically ambiguous when it comes to his political beliefs. People don't really understand too much about that because he is just keeping with the Constitution and upholding that in his rulings, which maybe does give away what he does believe personally, because apparently conservatives are the only ones who uphold the Constitution in their rulings anymore in the courts. But he had to answer a lot of questions that were attempting to slander him, and it's just not the way that you're supposed to go through those processes. You're not supposed to attack him like a vicious animal just because you don't agree with his beliefs.
They just have to take a page out of the debates that we saw a few years ago. They ask you a question, you just laugh and shake your head.
Yeah, imagine if he did that. They would be outraged if
he's laughing at
the
that.
Same way. Yeah.
He doesn't think this is serious.
Can't win. It's from the Federalist. Bernie Sanders doesn't think Christians are fit for public office. Might be a bit of a shot there with the title, but that's the general gist.
A bit of a problem with the religious freedom there. That's
right.
What people came to this country for in the first place.
Yeah, that's interesting. He's still in the news, still making some headlines. How old is Bernie Sanders?
Oh, I think he's 75.
Yeah.
He's older than President Trump.
This was his final go-round, probably, for trying to get into the presidency. How old is John McCain?
Oh, I think late 60s.
Is it that it? Okay.
Oh, he could be older. I don't remember.
Obviously, he's got a little bit of handicap, but
yeah.
It's just sometimes, you know, people kind of have their window to try to be president and then they're not. And for some reason, I expect them to kind of go away, but they don't. They just keep popping up. I'm like, oh, okay. But anyway, I thought you were going to retire. Abe, this is from newatlas.com. E3 2017, trailer roundup from EA, Ubisoft, and Bethesda. These are the video games that are coming out. This is their big conference, I guess, this E3. And what's interesting about it is just what is coming out in terms of these games and how violent in some cases and just horrifying in some cases these games are.
Yeah, I thought we could just take a look at this and see the kind of video games that will be on the market. These are just new ones, never mind all the ones that are out there right now. And
Because if there's one thing we need, it's more games. Don't you feel like, boy, if I could just have another video game?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just good to see what will be filling people's lives for hours and hours and hours. And just give an idea what E3 is. It's just a huge conference where all the video game developers come there and they show off their new equipment, their new games, trailers, all that sort of thing. So last year there were 50,000 plus people who went. And usually it's held at in the LA Convention Center. And just to give you an idea how big the video game industry is, in 2016, last year, they made $91 billion worldwide.
Yeah.
And a third of that, $31 billion, was in the USA alone. So huge industry, multi-billion dollars made every year. And these are the kind of games they're selling. At least these are the ones so far they've been released. So some of them are... there's like Mario and like a racing games, that sort of thing. But these are just a few of the titles coming out that young people, teenagers, will be playing a lot this next year. So one of them is called A Way Out. And basically you play co-op with two people and you're trying to plan a prison breakout. And that's what it's about. You're trying to break out from prison.
Which just happened today, by the way, in the news. And two officers were killed in Georgia. But anyway,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're in prison, you're stealing stuff, prison violence, anti-establishment, trying to get rid of the cops, all that sort of thing. So that's one of the games that's coming out soon there. Another one is called Doom, and Doom is a very old game. I think most people know what it is. You're trapped on Mars, and you run around shooting demons, basically. And so this game came back out in the 80s, but they've remastered it, and this one is virtual reality, so with the headset. And it's very, very gory, very violent. The things explode in your face, there's blood everywhere. It's just a very, very bloody thing. But that's what people want, in the highest definition possible. Another one is called Dishonored 2, where you're in this like haunted mansion killing zombies and assassinating people. I'm not too familiar with that one. This one, The Evil Within, this one is one of the darkest games ever made for games. Basically, it follows the haunted soul of one man he in The Evil Within One, so the one that's already out, he killed his girlfriend, and so it follows his guilt and through all these demonic dreams he has, and you play him through all these scenes. And then this one, his daughter dies in a house fire, and is dealing with his guilt and trying to find her, and just a lot of dark scenes and weird psychological thrilling or disturbing things where it's not really real. It's like traveling through the afterlife. So it's just a really dark thing, and this is what's available for people to play for hours.
Yeah, I can't help but notice two things. One is they have to get darker because people need more of a thrill, I guess. And then a lot of it has to do with like the spirit realm. You know,
yeah.
You're around, you know, with demons, or you're going to run around with all this weird, you know, psychological stuff that's going on. And what does that open you up to? You know, what does that open your mind up to, your thinking up to? And, you know, the argument for those that like these sorts of things would be, well, it's just a game. I'm not going to do it for real. But, it, you know, I think it's getting to the point where almost anybody with some common sense would say, well, that, but why do you want to pretend to do that? You know, I you know, if you think about, like, say, your kids or something, and if you, you know, you see them run around playing and they're pretending to, you know, do something odd, and you say, what are you doing? You're like, I'm pretending to murder, you know, the family or something. Wouldn't you say, hey, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. That's not right. But that's what people do in these games. I'm just pretending to murder all these people, or I'm just pretending to do this. I think most parents, if they had their wits about them, would tell their kids, don't pretend to do that, because you don't want to do it for real. So why even pretend to do it? If you want to pretend to be really good at, you know, being a professional athlete, well, that's great, because that is something that's, you know, there's benefit in that, the activity, the exercise, it's a goal you're working towards. I want to pretend to be a great musician. Well, great. Keep working at it. It's fun to imagine. Imagination is great. But I want to pretend to be this evil, dark, terrible monster. I think there's better things to pretend.
Yeah, it's just a really weird industry, and it's a huge industry. The reason, like I touched on the article I wrote about Call of Duty, and that's just a historically based game, but this society we live in, we want people to be nice. That's kind of the liberal idea. We're all treat each other fairly. There's no violence, no need for guns, all that sort of thing. But at the same time, we allow this industry to sell billions of dollars worth of games where you can simulate being a serial killer, a rapist, anything you want to be. And just the darkest, deepest, weirdest imaginations possible are right in front of you. And so it's just a strange dichotomy to me, is where we want people to, we believe human nature will improve and that we'll eventually won't have war because we're all treating each other nicely. But then we also fill people's minds with this kind of trash to where it makes them have fun while doing grisly acts of murder and committing atrocities. It's just a weird thing that we're committing our children to, exposing them to, and not just children. I mean, this is a very limited survey. Not a lot of research has been done on this, but the average age for a gamer, for a male, is 34. The average age for a gamer that's a female is 40.
That's amazing.
So they're older people. They're not even the millennials and the teenagers in high school. They're people who are have a day job, have children, and their children grow up playing video games with them, these sort of things. And, I mean, some of these things, some people have said that it gives them nightmares for the rest of their life. Like the images they see. And then it also makes people callous to pain, incompassionate. And just because I had a friend who liked playing this growing up, or these types of games. And they weren't nearly as bad when I was a teenager. But it's weird sitting next to someone who's laughing at killing someone. It made me feel really uncomfortable.
Sure.
I'm like, well, why is he like this? Like, it made me feel sick to my stomach. So it's just and that's the weird thing, is these games don't turn people into murderers necessarily, but it can. But it just makes you callous to having a society that's righteous, that loves peace, and that where you treat everyone with respect.
Well, you know, and two, with the gaming industry, and it's the same with some other industries that are out there, they're pushing it to get as close to you actually committing the act without actually doing it. That's why they want to put it out in virtual reality. Let's see how close we can get to it. And then on the out of the other side of the mouth, they say, it's just for fun, though. Well, then why do you have to get closer and closer to doing it for real? Why, it wasn't enough to just sit there and watch it. Now you have to interact. You want to. So they're trying to, they want to get as close as they can to actually doing these things. And then on the other hand, say, well, yeah, it's just a game. It just, those two things don't match up. And I think it's very easy to kind of lump people into two groups, like, oh, they're against video games, like every video game ever. I mean, some games are fun. You know, we play them for a little bit, Tetris or, you know, some of the sports games. You know, whatever, that's there's a conversation to be had there, I guess, too, about how much time you spend or whatever. But this is different. This isn't Tetris. This is, you know, just terrible murder and crime. Different.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and plus, too, why I think it does as well is, like you mentioned, a lot of it's on the spirit realm, and actually a lot of this imagery comes from foreign cultures. A lot of video games are designed in Japan or solely in Japan. They dominate the industry, and a lot of it comes from their culture, where a lot of their artwork up till today, it depicts demons and them interacting with humans, and that's where we get a lot of the imagery for our video games today. It actually comes from Japanese Far Eastern culture. And so what it does, I think, is that if you believe in a religion, you believe in certain things like that, like demons or a spirit world. And so when you see these things, it makes it feel like it's a game, like it's fantasy, and it's not real. And that's a danger, too, is to where it makes evil just look like something you can bash with a button when it's not like that. And you're just playing with fire, in my opinion, allowing these kinds of influences to dominate your mind. And there's plenty of examples out there of just people's moods being affected, being depressed more often, or just getting into really weird actions that ruin the rest of your life.
Right. I mean, sort of the thinking is, I can think about evil, I can pretend to do evil, but I'm going to be a good person. You can't. How can you? What you are, what you think about. You are what you do, even in your mind. There's very rarely a person out there that all of a sudden just randomly goes out and commits an act. You know, it could happen, I suppose, but typically they've been harboring the thought for a while, and then it blows up. Yeah. And you're just, like you said, I think people are playing with fire. You know, and they talk, too, about, like, if you want to talk about, say, the gun debate. Well, the thing that comes out in that a lot of times is, well, hey, you need a background check. This guy's unstable. He shouldn't have a weapon. Well, are people, who's buying these games? Are they, not that it would totally make a difference, but I mean, are they stable or are they very easily influenced? They don't check. They don't care. So there are certainly, even if you want to look at it just on terms of mental stability or emotional stability, they just sell it to anybody. You don't know who's playing these things. I don't, as far as I know, right? They don't like check you out before you buy it. Exactly. So
yeah, I think there's a certain rating. You have to be a certain age to buy it. Like if it has a 18 plus rating, you have to be 18 to buy it.
Right, but you know.
But once you buy it, your kid can play it or your friend, whatever.
You can get it online too without them knowing your age.
Yeah, exactly. You just order it from Amazon and it comes to your house. So it's not hard to get them. And like you mentioned, it's weird where we're against violence in our society, and that's good to be against violence, or against, we want gun control because of they think that will solve the problem. Well, if we're against violence, then get rid of all the violent media, the music that glorifies violence, the movies that glorifies illegal behavior, the video games that glorify violence, and just because it fills your mind with things that don't make you into a person that's viable in society. Just like I'm writing an article on Winston Churchill and his leadership during the Blitz. And a lot of writers say the reason he could do what he did and the reason he had such character was because he was filled with history, with the stories of the past, and allowed him to have the fortitude and the courage and learn from the examples to do something that's absolutely incredible. You're not going to learn those things from playing these kinds of games or any video game, frankly. It doesn't matter how good it is. You don't learn things. They're entertainment. They're for fun.
Yeah.
So it's just if we want our young people to be leaders that can help our nation through terrible times, these things are just eroding their character rather than building them into something that can actually help our nation.
That's the thing with history, too, is it's full of war. So if you had to get your, I guess, fix, you could call it, that's better than any fiction, and it's actually real, and it shows heroism and all kinds of manly virtues that you don't develop while sitting on the couch and laughing while you shoot somebody in a video game.
Well, and two, you know, people are very proud of their education in a lot of cases if they have a good one. People, oh, I went to such and such a place. Oh, well, great. But really, if you'd ask some people, you'd say, well, who's your teacher? Some cases it would be the video game. Well, this is my teacher growing up. This game. It teaches you something. It's not a separate thing. Like, well, I played it, but then I moved on and I became a doctor or whatever. I don't know. You know, I mean, you do kind of. And there obviously are some doctors who play video games. Whatever. There's something to be said there, but you don't spend all your time and all of your thinking on this one avenue and then just go do something completely different. Like humans, we just don't work that way. We do what we think about, you know?
Yeah, well, once it's in your mind, it never leaves. And so some people like this stuff. They like horror genres and all that kind of thing, but it's, I don't know, it's terrifying. Some of the images in here just leave you scared stiff because...
Even you telling me about it's bothering me a little bit. we had another story to get to. We'll get into it tomorrow about some of the things going on with the celebrity politicians. But that was a really good topic, so it was good. We had some time on that. The E3 2017 video games. They're not getting better. If that's a surprise to anyone, they're getting darker. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Make sure this is for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Hirsch, and Abraham Blondo. Have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.